There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right. Wow. It is deja vu all over again. Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com. Oh, okay. Round two. Done with the Randy Rhoads Show, though. Boy, that was so much fun. It was great filling in for Randy for these 4 days. And I thank her so profusely because, to be honest with you, as you know, I'm sure we've all been fired from a job at one point or another. This time, at least I wasn't fired. Everybody at Air America was fired. We were all let go because, well, they went bankrupt. They went under. They went away. I immediately, as you know, obviously, I moved the show online to RadioOrNot.com right here. And here we go. But there's a big difference when you're on a bunch of, as they call them, terrestrial radio stations and doing the internet thing too, that, you know, not only in the number of listeners, but in the feedback you get too. So from going Air America to internet only and then letting people know that you're here and getting them to listen, is a challenge. And I'll tell you, by the end of last week, I was starting to get a little discouraged. I'll be honest with you. Not only discouraged about, all right, is there anybody out there? And I knew that, you know, there was a group of people listening, but come on, you know, not in the numbers that when you're on a big radio network. And, you know, and add to the fact that I didn't have a paycheck coming in. So, I had a pretty down weekend. I did, and it happens. And then Monday morning, I woke up and I gave myself a pep talk and said, I'm going to do this. You know, I pick myself up. I dust myself off. I keep going. And then the phone rang and it was, Randy's producer telling me she snowed in and would I be available to fill in? And it's like, yes. You know, sometimes I'm not a God believer, but I am a believer in the powers of the universe. And sometimes the universe, you know, delivers what you need at the moment. And so this week, and I told Randy this in an email as I thanked her, this week has just been great for me, both for my psyche and for the pocketbook, you know, because I got a kid. I'm a single mom. I got a mortgage to pay. You know, that kind of stuff happens. So anyway, to the Randy Rhoads listeners who've come over to continue the conversation, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You know, I do have a mailing list at RadioOrNot.com. I hope you will, sign up for that so I can keep you posted on what's going on. I know a lot of the Air America listeners and the Randy Rhoads listeners are calling and writing the stations and asking them to put me on, and I'm working on ways to get that done. And thank you. You've created a great spirit boost for me, and I really, really appreciate it. Just so you know, I don't do the show on Friday nights, because I'm doing Monday through Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern here at RadioOrNot.com. Taking Fridays off. I especially need it this week because Monday I am flying out to Los Angeles. I'm going to be attending a great music conference next week called the Sunset Sessions. So I'll be doing the Ustream stream from there. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get the audio stream up, though I will try. And later on in the show, I'll tell you who's going to be at this music thing. But it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, so I may do a special Saturday edition. I will do the show Monday from L.A. Many of my long-term listeners remember Amy Simon. She's the Herstorian. She's working on a series called She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America and Beyond or something. But Amy's great, and we'll do it from her house on Monday night. I will not be here Tuesday, but, well, I might be. Here's the thing. Tuesday, and I'm still waiting for confirmation, Tuesday I'm supposed to be going to Jackson Brown's studio to do an interview with him. I'm hoping that he'll let me do a live thing and do the interview live here on Ustream. But I haven't gotten confirmation yet. So go visit the website, radioornot.com, all right? And I will update it there and keep you posted on when and where I'll be on, because the times may be a little screwy next week. All right. Yes, Joy, I got your link about Jackson Brown's house, and I will talk to him about that. So hopefully that's still on, just waiting to get the final confirmation from Jackson's people. And if that does happen, we may hit the air an hour early, or hit the web an hour early on Tuesday. And for you Randy Rhodes listeners, don't worry, because I will archive it afterwards, and it'll be up here on my page as well. Okay? So that's the back story for now. We're going to go to our first guest, who I first met last week. I think I told you I've been on a real Twitter kick lately. You know, for the longest time, I didn't get Twitter. And I'll tell you what really first got me understanding Twitter a little bit was the election in Iran. And when the people took to the street, it was incredible. And I was there, and Solo Pocono, who's in our Ustream chat a lot, really, you know, she took to Twitter and was helping the people in Iran get, I don't even know, proxies so they could get online. Right. And just following it, I was glued to the Twitter stream till all hours of the night, you know, trying to talk to people over there and let them know that we're with them. And I saw the power of Twitter. But, you know, then after that, it died down a little bit. I still didn't quite get the hang of it until the last couple of weeks. And I think the key is to creating some lists of people to follow, so you're not inundated with just tons and tons of these messages coming over and you can't keep up with them. And I found a few people whose tweets I just thoroughly enjoy. They put out great information, and a lot of them are very, very humorous. And so through Twitter, I met a guy who goes by the name of Shock, S-H-O-Q. And his website is Shock Value, I believe. And I had Shock on the show last Thursday night, and really enjoyed it. And he was a bit reticent to come on with me because he was not, you know, he didn't think he would do well on radio. Well, you know what? He did great. So Shock is back with me now. Are you there? Uh-oh, you know what? I think I muted my microphone, so he probably wasn't hearing me. Now, Shock, you there? No? Nope, I got to be. There you are.
Testing.
Okay, now you're there.
Goal.
Now, for the third time, Shock. Hi, can you hear me? Oh, now I've got
back.
My. No, don't. You there?
Yep.
Okay, now you got me. I got all my stuff going together. Shock is here. See, people are saying Shock's a sham. They didn't believe you were there. But I had all my, I had the sound pot down, and then I had the mic muted. But we are here. You are in, but you're messing with your microphone.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not. All right. So Shock is here. Shock, for the listeners who are just joining us, we got a lot of the Randy Rhodes people who came over, so thank you all. Tell us a little bit about yourself, because you are seemingly on Skype all the time. And so as I asked you last week, how do you earn a living?
You mean I'm on Twitter all the time?
I mean you're on Twitter all the time. Sorry.
Hold on. We're getting a lot of feedback here. I'm going to have to turn down your volume just a bit. Bear with me a second.
Okay. We're doing the sound check live on the air.
Okay.
All right.
Check, check. I can still hear you. I'm not feeding back anymore. Good.
Great.
As I told you last week, but of course your current callers wouldn't know, I'm a bit of an information technologist, I guess you could say. I've been mucking about with this technology probably since the mid-1980s. I started working with video disc technology. Remember those? Pioneer
laser
video discs?
Yeah.
I was sort of an early pioneer in playing with that technology and trying to find ways to move photo archives and collections online. Back in those days, we'd talk about tying video repositories to online hosts. So you'd have this video disc with maybe 600 or 700 photographs on it, and we'd integrate that video disc via a telephone modem with a blazing speed of 300 baud rate.
Right. I remember those, right?
Tie that video disc to the online host, via all kinds of existing very primitive protocols in those days, and you'd be able to summon up an image and say, well, I'd like to see a winter coat. And the video disc would sort of crank along, and the head would move along the disc, and lo and behold, there would be a full-color photograph. In those days, that was the only way you could really transmit a high-resolution image of any kind. It was a fake. You didn't actually transmit it. You sent it out on a disc, and you retrieved it from the disc by computer.
Okay. All right. Already my eyes are starting to glaze over because you're getting too technical for me. But so you're a tech guy. So, we should talk, and maybe you can help me with my studio here. So you work out of your home?
I do.
And you're in Arlington, Virginia. So you are just outside of D.C. How's the snow treating you, first of all?
Like most of the people in D.C., I've been indoors and not paying much attention. It's all stacked up outside, about 6.5 feet. I did step out today to get some milk and bread and cheese and other things I wrote on my palm.
You use the old school Palm Pilot,
yeah.
Yes, the teleprompter,
exactly.
Yes.
We're calling it the telepalmer?
The telepalmer, yeah.
And there was close to 6.5 feet of snow.
Wow.
In the center island of the parking lot outside my building. It seems that the plows have just decided to push it anywhere they could, so they've erected these giant glaciers in the center of the parking
lot. Well, you know, I remember those when I was a kid because I grew up in New York, and obviously they weren't 6 feet high, but we would climb up them and slide down. And I would imagine if you live in an apartment building, that's probably what the kids are going to be doing tomorrow.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, how much
but
fun.
This area is generally a mess. I mean, they just said today that we got something like 54 inches at National Airport.
Wow.
Which is the greatest annual accumulation in something like 90 years.
That is pretty intense. All right.
So what I do at home all day is I sit around thinking up cool stuff to do on social media.
Uh-huh.
And I consult to a few different projects. A couple of them that were kind of formed around some of my ideas that we have been working on for a number of years, that we'll try to find some way to make all of this social media integrate well with information collections so that we can basically be able to pass really meaningful data to each other almost as easily as we pass silly messages to one another.
Okay, so you must have seen the excitement of Twitter early on, where it took someone like me, I'm a slow learner, a while to catch on.
Yeah, I started about 2 years ago, I guess, and I was sort of into it. You know, I ignored it for a while because it was just one more social tool that I tend to try to stay up on. So I paid attention to it. I got online. I got an account. I built up a little bit of traffic. I talked to a few people. I learned how it worked. I wrote a little bit about it. But it, probably like most people, it wasn't until the campaign really started to heat up that I really started to see that Twitter was here to stay, because I noticed how much of the media was starting to gravitate to it already.
Right. And again, the stuff that I'm getting, you know, on there, you know, it's all and my favorites list on there is a lot of, you know, media people, because it helps me with my job. But that's how I'm getting updates on Bill Clinton, who had 2 stents inserted today. You know, the stuff is there. Plus, I think, you know, a lot of the media types and a lot of people that I regularly have on my show, say Brian Beutler of Talking Points Memo or Ryan Grimm from Huffington Post and people like that, a little more of their personality comes through on their tweets, because they don't only want to tweet work stuff. And, you know, so you get their personality, too. And so it's a really interesting technology.
Well, it is. And it's what's frustrating about Twitter is what a poor job Twitter does making the general public understand what Twitter is.
You're right.
You still continue to hear the same, as I once said on the Ron Reagan show, it's not about the bagel, which goes back to David Gregory's famous first tweet or second tweet or whatever the number was, where he talked about what he was having
uh-huh.
for breakfast. And that became the goofy meme that we heard all over the media. Oh, it's about the bagel. It's what I did today. Well, actually, no, it's not about any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
What Twitter is about is we have essentially balkanized the social media. You have most of the public is on Facebook, 300-400 million, whatever the number is today. And that's the mass market. That's your Xbox set.
Right.
That is having a ball, helping grandma with her photos.
Right.
And marketers are having a ball trying to reach you with any product they can push through the pipe and hit on your social graph. But then we have this whole other world that we call Twitter. What the public doesn't understand is that the influencers and the meme makers in the media are all on Twitter. You're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. Anna Marie Cox is on Twitter. Jake Tapper's on Twitter, mm-hmm. and on and on and on. The people, Barack Obama was on Twitter. He's not now, or at least he's not under his own name.
Right.
But we're reasonably sure that he probably is in one form or another. But that's the point. We've established now around the world the people that are actually influencing the mainstream media are using Twitter as their preferred communications capability because it's much easier. And let's face it, they're about as technically illiterate as most people in the general population.
You're right. And there's there are ways to, you know, to find quickly the people that you want to follow on some of these lists. For instance, there's the hash marks that, you know, the pound sign that people use for items. And the one for the progressive community really is the hash mark P2, letter P number 2. And if you tag your tweets with that, and then somebody puts in a search for P2, you're going to pull up tweets, posts from progressive Twitters, right?
Right. Which we call a feed.
A feed.
Feed or a stream. So the hashtag that you've described will show up in somebody's Twitter message, and it will automatically be underlined as a link. So in fact, all you have to do in most programs that read Twitter streams is click on that linked hashtag. It will open up a web page and show you the stream of all the people communicating about that particular hashtag topic.
Mm-hmm.
There are serious hashtags, which we follow all the time.
Right.
There might be a Ron election, et cetera. And there are goofy hashtags that my friend Liz Winstead and I will play to the absolute distraction of many people. You've seen us play it before. We'll create a balloon boy tag or new Oscar movie titles or new Oscar awards, I think, was one the other day.
Mm-hmm. Liz Winstead's hysterical, by the way. And,
sure.
You know, and
she's the ultimate hashtagger.
Yeah, she is. And I actually stole a little, idea from you because when the week started and I was filling in for Randy, I did hashtag snowstorm silver lining, you know, because, hey, this snowstorm was really good for me. So,
By the way, to talk about the immediacy of Twitter, while I'm talking to you, I just got an instant message from my good friend Carolee, who reminded me that Obama is too on Twitter, and he's actually been tweeting again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just heard that myself, but I haven't seen him do it yet.
Okay, and do we know what his name is on Twitter?
Let me ask her. She'll tell me right now.
All right. See, look how
Barack Obama. But
Barack Obama. That would make sense.
All we have to do is say it, and the text will start moving in my instant message window,
yep.
And up it comes. And Carolee tells me that it's, guess what?
Barack Obama. Well, very cool. And now, I am Nicole Sandler, all one word. You do the @ Nicole Sandler, and you'll find my page. And Shock is @ SHOQ. And it's that easy. And you can click on the page and you can follow. You don't have to wait for someone to approve you as a friend. You just say, I want to follow that person, and you can follow them. And then
go ahead. I'm sorry.
You go. You.
And the secret, when you first get on, you'll discover very quickly that, well, nobody follows you.
Yeah.
And you don't follow anyone. And that's Twitter's failing. They don't really help you understand how you get in and build this community. But it happens very quickly. Follow some people, follow a few celebrities and a few news people, but then follow your friend, find out who your friends are, follow some of them, go into some of the directories, and if you just Google for Twitter directory, you'll learn about 10 or 20 of them. If you're a progressive, you can go to tweetprogress.us, and you can find all kinds of progressives. Nicole Sandler is probably there. I'm certainly there on page one or two. You can go into any of these directories and you can find people. You'll look for the people who have the counts under 50,000. There'll be more the real people you usually want to talk to,
uh-huh.
and that are likely to engage you.
Right.
The people that tend to be over those numbers tend to be celebrities, whether they talk to you or not, depends upon the time of day, their mood, etc. But sometimes they will. If the general rule of thumb that I always tell people is, earn your followers the old-fashioned way. Be interesting.
Right.
And if you are, people will find you pretty quickly.
Yep.
When you see a conversation going on, follow a hashtag, open up another browser, follow a tag that interests you. Maybe it's the P2 tag, which is, again, #P2. You can search for that right from Twitter.com. Go ahead and watch that, follow that feed, see people saying things that are interesting to you, and immediately follow them. About 30% of the people that you follow will automatically follow you back, as a rule of thumb. So, consequently, there are people that just do nothing but follow hundreds of people a week, sometimes thousands, hoping that they'll just get X percentage of people following them back. Don't worry about being followed back. The important thing is be interesting.
Yeah.
People will find you.
If you're interesting, they will follow you. Yeah.
Yep.
And Rachel Maddow is on there. You know, Rachel, you said Anna Marie Cox. I mean, there's a Larissa, our friend Larissa, who's a regular guest. Larissa Alexandrovna is on there. You know, it seems like everybody is. You know, Josh at Talking Points Memo. I mean, it goes on and on. But once you get in there and you start following
Melissa,
a group of people. I'm sorry?
Melissa Lacewell Harris.
Yes. Yep.
Also there.
That's right.
Maddow will rarely engage people under her own name, but she has Maddow Blog, and I'm told she has another name.
Oh, really?
But the important thing is that they're watching.
Yes.
Either they or their staff are watching. And there are little tricks that you can get noticed. The important thing is if you're quick with a piece of information that's useful to people, you can what's called at mention them, which means it doesn't matter whether they follow you or not. If you say at Maddow and say, Rachel, did you see this?
Mm-hmm.
It will show up in her mention stream. Now, you may think, well, my God, thousands of people must be talking to her. Not really. She may get mentioned a number of times, but most of these people just put their pants on one leg at a time like the rest of us, and their streams are not as overwhelming as you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on who they are. It depends upon what's happening that day, et cetera. But generally speaking, people will see the tweet. They may not always respond, and you probably wouldn't either, but that doesn't mean they won't.
Right.
And there, we all kind of experience this excitement the first time somebody we really like retweeted us or responded. And I'm sure you experienced it yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's a very exciting moment when, oh, my God, Joan Walsh responded to me or she retweeted me. I got so excited. I can't stand it. We hear this all the time.
Uh-huh.
And everybody that's been on Twitter knows that exhilaration when somebody they respect acknowledges them.
Right.
That has never existed before in the history of civilization, and that's what people don't get about Twitter, is that there has never been this convergence of classes of people together who could reach out and communicate with each other at all, let alone whether they felt they could get the attention or not. Blogging kind of hinted at this activity in the sense that, oh, I could post a comment and maybe somebody interesting who also read that same blog might respond to me. Or maybe I could join a forum like The Well, we're talking about now, the mid-1980s, where maybe I could meet some interesting people. Maybe Stuart Brand would be on The Well and maybe he'd respond to me, maybe. Or I could go on CompuServe or AOL chat room back in the early days.
Remember
and maybe
those.
There'd be somebody. Yeah. But with Twitter, there's always someone there.
Right.
And you can reach that. You may fail with the first person, and you may succeed with the next person. And that's what makes it so different than anything that has come before. I've actually had a response from how do you pronounce her name again? Rania of Jordan.
Wow.
She's actually responded to me twice, which is really flattering. Doesn't mean a whole lot because she's just playing like the rest of us. But it does illustrate what can happen. What will be interesting to me is to see when this Twitter activity has a really, really dramatic impact on somebody's life or a technology or a political meme that got triggered by a single tweet. It already has happened, but nobody's sort of keeping a running scoreboard.
Yeah, but
kinds of things.
Do you agree that the election aftermath in Iran might have been the first true test of what Twitter is capable of?
For me, that was almost a fairly obvious application, and I kind of expected it as it was happening, and I still think it's been greatly inflated in terms of its importance.
Hmm.
because it's a very big and dramatic moment, but so was the Haiti earthquake.
Right.
But had a much more tangible way of measuring the response. There were actually people calling for rescue from Twitter. You know, there was something you could really see. With Iran, what you were seeing, what was very, very interesting, was how it was being gamed. You didn't know whether you were seeing the Iranian intelligence services, the Iranian government, the CIA, our own government.
Right.
People were gaming everybody else. And there were constant warnings, so-and-so's a spy, don't talk to them, don't go over to that hashtag. It was complete pandemonium. In that sense, it was an interesting social experiment. And it certainly brought Twitter to the attention of the world. So in that sense, it was very important. For me, I didn't see it as any more or less important as the way that the LA Fire Department was using Twitter at that point. A very interesting early application where firefighters were communicating with each other using this, you know, it was almost like push to talk. You know, it was so simple that all you had to have was your little hand. Each party had to have their handset and they could talk to each other. And they figure out how to do it very, very rapidly.
Right.
But they were doing it with text and text that's persistent. And the beautiful thing about persistence is you can always come back to that information after the fact and see the conversation as it unfolded. People don't do that a lot, but it's there to do.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about Twitter is that it's time asynchronous. You can sort of come into it at any time and always catch up with the stream. But as you pointed out, sometimes the stream is overwhelming.
Yes. Yes. That's why you have to figure out how to get through the overwhelming elements of the stream.
And did you fall for the Google Buzz hype yesterday?
No, I looked at it and didn't understand what it was, and I went away. What is, we're speaking with Shock. He's on Twitter at SHOQ, and somebody I met on Twitter. I was intrigued by his tweets, and we have some mutual friends, and I contacted him and invited him on the show last week, and it went well, and as you can see, you can hear why. So Shock, tell us about Google. We heard Google Wave a couple of months ago, and I got that, and I haven't figured it out. And now yesterday it was Google Buzz, and I don't get it. What is it?
Yeah, Google has a spectacular ability to develop really cool stuff, but they're a very engineering-oriented company, and they're very geeky. And they know that they're so big and so huge that they can win over time with almost anything they choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to develop these really interesting technologies, and they put them out there. And there's usually an accompanying hype. And then everybody goes and sort of discovers what they can do with it. Since Google's so big and doesn't have to have a business model for anything it does because it makes money selling advertisements.
Right.
So it can develop this technology and just sort of put it out there as an incubator and wait and see what happens to it. We'll never know what they really think, what they really want to do. And they may not even know, and they're under no obligation to tell us. And they're like a lot of tech companies. They're not going to talk about what they think or what they want or what they know or what they want to do. They just do it.
So they put it out there and just, well, see what happens with it?
Right. Wave was misunderstood. Wave is really simple, basically. It's a protocol that allows collaborators to kind of eliminate the need to understand how they're going to open a wiki document, for example, among their social group and collaborate on a given document. They put it kind of in an email-like paradigm where we send these little messages that they call blips to one another.
Yeah.
And you can go into a common document and write it. You and I might say, oh, let's write a wedding invitation together. So we'll go into this document that's a lot like a wiki document that you might find on Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into this document and edit it together. But we can also invite our friends to edit the document. Unlike Google Docs, it's a lot like Twitter. You'll see nice, cute little avatars of all the people that you've admitted to the Wave. So the Wave is really nothing but a collaborative document center, if you will, where you can bring people and content together in one place and author it together. Buzz, if that made sense to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Buzz is a whole other animal. Okay, Buzz is more like Twitter, but they are trying to go after the aggregation space, whereby they're going to provide your one-stop interface, in their mind, at any rate, where you'll be able to get all of your friends' information from all of their miscellaneous social networks, from Twitter to Facebook to StumbleUpon to yada, yada, yada. there are literally dozens of these networks.
Right.
Including the ones that you've now seen turning up on Huffington Post, which are sort of third-party products that make, that the Huffington Post can join and get an instant social network within their own user community.
Yeah, is that sort of like Ning or something?
Say again?
Ning?
Ning. Yeah, Ning is a social networking platform that allows anybody to create a social network in a few minutes.
Right.
Okay, let's call it a few hours.
Okay.
It doesn't work as well as advertised, but it works as well as many people, including an awful lot of fringe right-wing Tea Party groups, can use with a great deal of ease,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right.
In fact, the right has seized on products like Ning and various clones of Ning to create their own little social networks, you know, whether it's ResistNet. I don't even want to name the names of them, but you've seen many of them.
Right, right.
We have now Ning networks for white supremacists, and we have Ning networks for garden variety racists, and we have Ning networks for progressives, and they're all over the place. Some of them have 3 people, some of them have 3,000,
right,
some of them,
right.
I'm told a couple of them have 3 million. I think Ning claims that they have something on the order of 2 to 3 million social networks.
I got you.
Yeah. Among that are probably the 3 that I created and never went back and used. So
right, and that's the thing. I with Ning, yeah, I guess there are those kind of things. All right, you know, so we're getting a little overly technical here, and I can see from the people in the chat room, they're like, okay, there's this whole world out there, and it, for people who like me at the beginning said, Twitter, I don't get it, and you know the bagel thing, there's more to it. So if you do the P2 and just do a P2 search on Twitter, you might start getting interested in it and you might start getting addicted like I have. You know, I was on Twitter all through the Super Bowl and enjoying it because I couldn't care less about the Super Bowl, but I had fun interacting and watching the people that I enjoy following on Twitter and seeing their snarky comments as well.
Well, there's also a thrill that people get when they're the first ones in their community that learned of something and passed it on.
Yeah.
There's a big high that you can detect in people on Twitter that are doing that, and it does become very addictive and very infectious. Once you sort of catch that bug, it's very hard to break out of it again. In fact, I don't know many people that have. Most people that I know who got into Twitter are still on Twitter.
Right. Right. Well, and the other thing is Facebook keeps messing with their thing. And so, you know, just last week they redesigned it again, and now it's hard to see people's posts, and half of them don't show up. And, you know, what's the old saying? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why does Facebook keep messing with everything?
Because they're Facebook. because remember, Facebook still isn't even profitable.
Yeah.
So it still has to find a business model, and it's constantly hearing the footsteps of hundreds of competitors.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean,
the next Facebook.
Well, Facebook at least has advertising. What about Twitter? How does Twitter make money?
Depends on who you talk to. Twitter's working on its business model routinely. The general consensus is that Twitter plans to make money through various kinds of value added, selling metrics and data, and you know, telling advertisers who's interested in their product, who's mentioning things that they may want to be interested in, that they may want to talk to them about, using them like Comcast is using it, whereby they have their customer support people looking for anybody saying Comcast sucks. And before you know it, Comcast, whomever, will swoop down on you and say, well, what do you mean Comcast sucks?
Huh?
Why do we suck exactly?
So maybe I can do that and they'll give me a break on my cable bill?
You just go ahead and say Comcast sucks and watch what happens.
I'm afraid they'll cut me off. So
they can't cut you off. That's the beautiful part about Twitter.
They could cut off. I have Comcast cable here, and that's how I'm connected to the internet.
Oh, they could.
That's
cut
what
off
I'm talking about.
Feed.
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah,
they could.
Yeah, I don't want that because you know cable companies have monopolies around here.
So now we're going to talk about the Comcast-NBC merger? No.
Let's do this. Okay, because Shock, we got off on this tangent, and because we were going to talk a bit about politics, because in addition to being an expert on, you know, the internet and all these different social media and everything, you're a progressive blogger. shockvalue.com, shockvalue.com, and if you look up Shock's Twitter feed and you click on the link, because you can put a URL there, it'll take you to your blog, and you are very much involved with a progressive message. Let me also do this, because I got my phones figured out. I got a new phone number. It is a toll-free line, at least for now. We'll see how it works. 800-782-2131. 800-782-2131. And if you want to call in, we'll see how it goes. But all right, so let's continue. So why don't we talk about the Comcast-NBC merger? Do you want to do that, or you want to talk about progressive politics? What would you
really,
like?
I'm really, really upset. No, I'm kidding. It's not one of my pet topics right now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to, because what you wanted to talk about tonight is really something that I touched on during Randy's show, which is the need for people to get involved now to get truly progressive candidates elected. And and there's somebody there. I should turn off the ringer, but there's a way they can queue up and everything. But we'll do this. Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Habu.
Hey, Habu, you're on with Nicole Sandler and Shock. What's up?
This isn't real time.
It is real time.
Oh, good. You know, I'm so glad to have gotten through, and I've heard you on Randy Rhodes, and I thought, my goodness, what a progressive-minded person, and I really wish you all the very best in your endeavors. I know these are tough times, but some voices like yours in the wilderness, if you will, are what we need, and you really have a progressive agenda, unlike the liberals, the silly liberals.
Unlike the silly liberals?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know who the silly liberals are, but thank you. I mean,
waving my hand.
But no, Shock, you are a progressive as well. But I thank you so much. Where are you calling from? Did we lose the caller? Uh-oh.
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, great. So you heard me on Randy's show.
Say what silly liberals are. You seem to ask a question on that. Those who are bowing to Obama no matter what, you know, he was one of the more decent guys in the primaries and deserved to be elected, but now it's time to produce, which he hasn't done. And yet you have these people kind of still, at the altar worshiping him, you know.
I got you.
That's what I mean by silly.
The silly liberals are the ones who just blindly follow the Democratic Party without questioning. And I understand. I got you, because I agree with you there. You know, I will always criticize the president or anybody else who is in elected office who I do not think is doing a good job. And Shock, I think you're right there with me, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I do have a problem with those who just follow blindly. I mean, I really appreciate Randy letting me, you know, fill in for her for so long, because honestly, the first few times I filled in for her, the first time was actually on my birthday, which just happened to be November 4th, which was Election Day, a year after Obama was elected president. And on November 4th, I was at the place where I was so fed up with him. I'm like, where is the guy I voted for? And her listeners were so angry with me. Why was I slamming Obama? And the thing is, I wasn't slamming him, but I want to find the guy that we voted for. I want that strong, tough, you know, guy. And he would just turned into Mr. Wimp.
Hold up.
Okay.
I want you to let my friend Carolee call in right now.
Okay. All right. Okay? All right.
Let me copy her the number, because she lost it. Hold on a minute.
All right. So, Habu,
because
I'm
nodding my head while you were talking, because you hadn't specifically mentioned the president.
Nicole, may
yet.
I just say two
yes,
very quick
yes,
things?
Yes, please do.
One is that two things he's completely dropped the ball on. One is the health care, and the second thing is the economy. He's doing squat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I'm so glad you came over to RadioOrNot.com to keep listening.
I'll be keeping track of you and watching you regularly. And I wish you all the very best.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye. All right. I am going to see if I can figure out how to turn off this ringer. But I will still see a pop-up when somebody calls, because I know that ringer was really, really loud. So, and I bet this is Carolee. Is this Carolee?
This is Carolee.
Hi. Well, welcome to the show. So Carolee is on now. I love this. All right, so we do have the phone number. I just have to figure out how to mute the ringer. But it is...
Now we're going to tag team you.
800-782-2131. But now we're on with Carolee. Hi, it's so nice to meet you. I understand you're a former radio person, too, are you?
Yeah. And a stupid liberal, too.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah. I don't know about the silly thing, but I understand what he was trying to say. He probably just used the wrong words to get it across, which was, you know, there are those people who blindly follow Obama. Some people call them Obama bots, you know?
Yeah, I know. I get called that.
Oh, do you?
So, oh, yeah.
Oh, so you're one of them.
Yeah, well, no, but so I get called that a lot.
Okay.
I mean, but look, there's a distinction to be made here between what I consider myself to be is realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, my pug obviously knows I'm on the phone, so she's barking. I'm going to have to move. But there's a difference here between being just blind and being realistic, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, Obama is not Superman. He cannot twist arms in Congress. He cannot make them do what he wants. And anybody who thought that we had, you know, a 60-seat majority in the Senate wasn't being realistic. We didn't.
Yeah.
So, what are your options?
They weren't being accurate. It has nothing to do with being realistic. It's not accurate to say we have a 60-seat majority when we don't.
Well,
right. We never did.
You're saying
we have what people like to fondly now refer to as conservadems. They were called blue dogs. They were called conservadems. The fact is there were a lot of them, and they almost uniformly vote with Republicans on most issues of on issues of near and dear to most conservatives. They are conservatives who just happen to wear the Democratic label. But they are not going to vote with Obama. They are not going to vote with progressives unless they are paid a lot to do it one way or another, whether we call that pork, payoffs, corruption, graft, or public relations, or not getting primaried next time out. The fact is they are not our friends, and they stand very much in the way of the progressive agenda.
I agree with you, and we do. And that's why we need to work really hard to replace those conservadems. There are the blue dogs in the House. It's the Blue Dog Coalition, which is a House organization. In the Senate, they're not really blue dogs, but they are conservadems. And you know what? I'd love to see somebody challenge Blanche Lincoln in the primary, a progressive Democrat. Although, you know what? In Arkansas, that person may not, you know, be able to win. But the thing is 60% or 70% of the American people want a public option. That includes some people who are not necessarily liberals. So, you know, if we had some true progressives out there in those conservative markets, they may find enough of a following who are fed up with the way things are. That can get elected, but you don't know until you try.
Hello?
And yet, do you see the conundrum? You're willing to say that they're a big part of the problem, but then it's all too easy to then blame Obama for not being able to rub his little green decoder ring and make it all change. He can't change what we've allowed to occur over 30 years of allowing the conservative agenda to have this kind of power over our political system. I never thought he'd change that, so that makes me an Obama bot now, because simply, as Carolee would say, I'm being realistic.
Yeah,
I'm simply looking at the very person that I knew I elected to do a really thankless, ugly job, which is to sit there and try to figure out how we can start inching our way back. There are people that think, oh, he just needs to be bold and have a bold agenda and not roll over. Well, it's not exactly that simple. as you're now seeing every day. As Carolee loves to say, most of these issues are really, really wonky. The average person doesn't have a clue what's in that health care bill. The people that say read the bill didn't read it. Mm-hmm. We both know they didn't read it. Most of the people who were supposed to read it didn't read it.
Yep.
Even if you did read it, you wouldn't understand it.
Right.
Carolee, who's been doing this stuff for years, sometimes doesn't even understand it. It's very wonky, complicated stuff that our new Xbox generation of progressives believes there must be a solution. Well, we pay all of this money. We have all these smart people. Well, not really. It's really difficult because we are trying to protect a commercial system. We are trying, just looking at healthcare, we are trying to protect the system. When I say we, I mean Washington is trying to protect something that is largely 1/6 of our economy. If you think that's going to be changed because a couple of bloggers get upset about a public option, you're just not dealing with reality. You may think you can force their hand in Washington, but go ahead and prove it. If it's that easy to do, why hasn't anybody been able to do it? Do you think they really don't want to? I believe many people do, but it's going to be a long, slow slog to get there. And I think Carolee agrees with me that what the people called Obamabots are hoping is that we can make some incremental progress, begin to, as I said last week, begin to chip away at this kind of hegemony that conservatives now have over Washington in every aspect of our media. That's our real enemy. Obama is just the guy we elected to drive the bus. He can only be as good as the bus we give him to drive. We have to start restructuring the progressive agenda so that in each election, it's no longer a complete crapshoot whether we can muster enough votes to even hold on to a House seat or mm-hmm. hold on to a Senate seat. Right now, that's all we're doing. We go from one fire to another. Oh, we have to hold on to that seat or that seat. We have to deal with this issue now, or we have to talk about Comcast. We go from one crisis to another, always allowing the right wing to dictate the narrative, as Carolee likes to say. They're constantly dictating what we talk about. Just take a look on Twitter. Are we usually talking about the progressive agenda, or are we talking about some response to a right-wing assault on a progressive agenda?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is what we're usually talking about. And I couldn't agree with Carolee more. And by the way, we lost her. But the right does decide the agenda. They're great at framing the argument, and the Democrats are always playing catch up. Look, if they were the ones who proposed the public option, you think they would have called it the public option? Hell no. It would have been Medicare for all. Medicare, a program that is popular among everybody who has it. Anybody who can get into it loves what they get from Medicare. It would have been Medicare for all, yet the Democrats call it the public option. What the hell does that mean? They don't know how to frame a message. And so that is one of the key problems, is that they don't have a good enough marketing person running it, you know?
Total agreement. And that takes us back to what we opened with when you opened your show and you asked me what I did. My interest is largely how can we take the information of government and the kinds of stuff that's constantly being bungled by the media and make it more, give it more currency. How can we make information work for the public interest on a day-to-day basis so that the Democrats aren't sitting there, you know, showing up with nothing in their hand but their privates when they show up on the floor, and they try to wing through these very lame debates in front of a C-SPAN camera. That's not how you're going to beat this professional conservative infrastructure that now exists in Washington. These people are professionals. They have dozens of professional shops that produce the crud we see all over the internet every day. Whether it's Rick Berman and his organization, you know, and I'm sure you saw Maddow's famous profile of Rick Berman,
kinds
of astroturf organizations he creates. That's just one guy and one company. There are dozens and dozens of those organizations, and they produce very slick media kits and campaigns. They produce very well-crafted messages. They work with talking points created by guys like Frank Luntz, who know how to craft with great deal of precision a message that is going to resonate with a very precise demographic that they know is going to be very vocal. They know they can get those people to call Pelosi's office. They know they can get them to call Reid's office. That kind of old-fashioned Democratic activism works, and conservatives know it, and progressives take it for granted. I've been looking much today. I was refreshing myself on some of what I know about this. Most people today, I don't think, realize that for many, many years, progressive philanthropies and organizations focused on the things near and dear to progressives. They were interested in the environment, in civil rights, in affirmative action, in diversity, in all these good issues that progressives hold dear. Foundations, whether it was Stuart Mott or Ford or the Rockefeller Foundation, all these entities in the 70s, earlier than that, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, they were all always funding these progressive initiatives. They completely ignored the grassroots organizing, the advocacy, all of the infrastructure of politics. The right did not ignore that. And in fact, people like Richard Viguerie and their newsletter machineries took root in the 80s, and they started to perfect this process whereby they could reach out to constituencies, organize them in a moment, and get them to both go to the poll. Karl Rove proved he could get them to the polls, but they could get them to do their bidding in Congress. So today you have mostly right-wing entities, whether we call them Tea Parties or the Republican Party, who are very good at getting mobilized on the spur of the moment and getting on the phone when asked. When we try to get progressives to do the same thing, it's often like pulling teeth.
Yep.
They can't seem to find the time. They feel that they're not going to be effective. They don't think it's going to make any difference. You hear countless excuses from progressives. We need to change that narrative, and we need to change it quickly.
We have to
get people to act.
You're absolutely right. Shock is with us here on RadioOrNot.com. We got somebody holding on the phone. If I can figure out how to unhold this call and take it. Let's see. Line one. Hi there. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Angelo, and on Twitter, my handle is StopBeck.
StopBeck. Oh, I just followed you today. You followed me, and I followed you.
I did. I followed you because I saw you. I saw Shock mentioning that he was going to be on your show, and that's how I discovered you.
Very cool. So your handle on Twitter is Stop Beck, and I take it you're not a Glenn Beck fan.
I'm not a Glenn Beck fan. I'm definitely an anti fan.
All right.
But I did wanted to pick up on one point that the Shock was making, and I'm not sure. I didn't really hear the tail end of it because. It doesn't play the radio on the when you're on hold.
I know.
He may have mentioned it, but I one of the things that I on point about organizing and getting people involved, and when he was talking about the larger point of this sort of this comprehensive approach that conservatives take.
Whoop! Hold on. Sorry. Did I? I think Shock. You still? I'm sorry.
I'm still here.
Andrew, you still there?
I am still here.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Go on.
What I wanted to point out is that. One of the things that I have been interested in lately is organizing around, which may seem very mundane, but it is particularly important when it comes to the way that our politics and our government works, is getting people mobilized around things that are put into the Federal Register, taking action on even the most minute things of administrative law, which actually have significant and profound day-to-day consequences for the way that people live. And so when Shock was talking about organizing the sort of mundane and very boring and sometimes extremely complicated information of government and organizing it in a way that can be useful for progressives, I actually see a lot of opportunity here. And although I'm a particularly dismal outlook on the way things are now, it does provide me some sense of optimism. I mean, there's a lot of work being done that helps organize, things that were not previously accessible, for example, the Federal Register. In a way that will allow us to talk about it in a very concise way, get it out to our people, and actually take action on it. And this does not require, hundreds of thousands of people or even thousands of people to take action. Even a few hundred or even a couple dozen progressives writing in and commenting on these administrative procedures could actually have an effect. And one example most recently is I noticed that the Sentencing Commission had, proposed a new rule change which would actually alleviate punishments for corporations. Whose high-level executives, do something illegal. And it was a sentencing change. It was actually going to alleviate or lighten the penalties for corporations. And it's very minor in the sense that it would get completely ignored. But because of the technology that exists today, there's a way for us to not only access this, but then easily comment on it in a way that can actually be accessible for, I like what Shock described as the X-Tube, progressives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, X-Tube, Xbox.
Progressive, yes.
Right, yeah, Xbox.
Nicole, Carol is trying to call back and getting a voicemail.
Oh, okay. All right. Tell her, sorry, I'm still trying to figure out this phone thing because I just got this new phone system. And you know what? Let's do this. If we can. Andrew, thank you for calling. Great points. I really appreciate it. Let's do this. We're going to take a break. Somebody is on hold from overseas. Let's just see who this is on hold. Hi, who's this? Hello? Try that.
Oh, hi, this is Stu Tweedy. How are you?
Oh, hey, Stu Tweedy. Where are you calling from?
I'm from London in the UK.
How awesome is that?
Oh. Hope you're well. I'm watching your show.
Okay, well, thanks so much. So can I ask how you found us?
Oh, I watch on the Ustream TV.
Okay, and what is your thoughts over there in London, and what's happening in American politics?
So it's really interesting. A couple of things. You guys all knock Obama. I reckon, from an outsider's perspective, I reckon that you've probably got the most charismatic president you've had for a lot of years.
I agree.
What?
But charisma. I think charisma isn't enough.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, the president's job is not an easy one, and it's like trying to drive a super tanker or a runaway train. At the end of the day, there's only so much the guy can do. And
that's what Shock has been
saying. But it's about leadership, and I think the guy's got some vision. He's got some leadership. Give him a chance.
Okay. Well, I want to see more. Yes.
So the other thing that interests me is all of the debate about health and the health reforms that he's trying to introduce as well. And there seems to be a lot of hysteria. And I know there was a lot of pushback about when he tried to introduce, he tried to suggest the health reforms, there was a pushback about it would be like the National Health Service in the UK. And we've had the National Health Service in the UK since 1947, and I reckon the National Health Service in the UK is probably one of the greatest health services in the
absolutely.
World.
Absolutely.
And that's what
we
need. You see, and that's why I'm angry at Obama, because
the way that it's funded is that we all pay taxes and things like that. We have a separate tax come off our wages every month called National Insurance.
Sure. And that's what we would like.
It's set aside to pay for the National Health Service, and it's a modest amount. It's not a big amount. It's based on your income, and it's got a cap on it as well. So if you earn more than a certain amount, your contribution to that doesn't go any higher.
Exactly, and that's what we want. And my problem with Obama is he didn't even want to hear from what we're calling the single payer advocates, the advocates for a national health program. Didn't even want to. They didn't even get a voice at the bargaining table when the debate on health care started.
That was his committee. That was Baucus.
I understand,
Obama,
but you know
Obama
what?
Let Congress do it.
But he shouldn't have. You know, in that respect, that's when he needed to take on his role as the leader of the Democratic Party and tell Max Baucus, you need to hear from these people.
But again,
yeah,
I think
you're sophisticated enough to know how complicated Washington is.
Do you
if
really
you
think
hold on, Chuck, hold
health
on.
Services around the world? Just take a look at them and say, look, how do these work? How do they perform? And you'll find there are health services out there.
Hold on a second.
That's Carolee, I bet.
I know. I'm trying to put her on hold.
Steaming.
All right. She's on hold. Oh, boy. Hold on, Carolee. I'm sorry. You're still on.
You there?
Yes. We're still here. Go ahead. Stu Tweedy, are you still hearing me? Oh, he's not hearing me. So much for my hear.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay, there you are. Okay.
I'm here.
Hi.
Yeah, what I was just saying there is if you guys, I mean, setting politics aside, setting personalities aside, if you look at some of the health services in other countries around the world, there are some really good systems there. People get, really good health care. and it doesn't have to cost people a lot of money. And all they have to, somebody's just got to have, be brave enough to stand up there and say, this is where we're going to go, this is what we're going to do, and let's get on and do it.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that's what we want. And that's why I'm critical of Obama, because I think he does need to do more in his role as the head of the Democratic Party, in addition to being the president of the United States. And I think he should have taken a stronger role in this health care debate. I think, you know, we had two extremes here. Bill Clinton, who did everything and presented it to Congress, or Hillary did everything, presented it to Congress and said, here's your bill. And they said, screw you. And there's Obama who said, okay, you do it and then give it to me. And there's got to be some middle ground. He needed to play a stronger role in the negotiations
Absolutely,
and to move it along.
And it's a shame because he is such a charismatic person, because he is such a potentially great leader, that he doesn't just pick up the baton and run with it now.
Exactly.
Because he could make such a difference if he just got up and did it.
Really? Now that, you know, I think he got his ass kicked a little bit when the Democrats lost Ted Kennedy's seat, that he realized that he better step up to the plate and start being the commander in chief of the Democratic Party as well. And hopefully he will.
Okay. Let's talk about some reality here.
Okay. But wait a minute. Shock, you know what? Shock, hold on 1 second. But Stu Tweedy, I'm going to let you go. Any second. Okay,
okay.
But thank you so much for calling and for listening. I hope you'll call back again.
No problem.
Okay.
Love what you talk to you. Cheers. Take care.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Cheers. Toodaloo. I love that. Any second now, I'm probably going to get a call from somebody at the Talk Radio News Service, just so you know, Shock. So if I interrupt you, we got to go to a news update. Unless they can't get through because you're on the line they usually call in on, but I think they can still call. I'm juggling two weird, you know, phone systems here.
You're
so
the boss.
So we'll see what happens. But if I tell you to hold on, it's because they're calling in. All right. Anyway, back to it. You were saying.
You're like many people. You're looking at this as if Obama was elected with a progressive mandate. He wasn't. Let's get that out of the way right now. He won by about 10 million votes. If you split the difference, that means he's president because of about 5 million votes. Mostly 5 million votes because a lot of conservatives stayed home. Not because that many progressives came out, but in fact, conservatives stayed home. That's why he's president of the United States. The right loves to say we're a center-right nation. I don't believe that we actually are in terms of our core beliefs and our philosophies, but in terms of our operative politics, we very much are a center-right nation. And that's why you quickly saw the support erode. Remember what's happened for the last year. You didn't just have Obama asking Congress to go ahead and pursue health care. What started immediately was a relentless assault in the media.
You're right.
Of both the media and advertising. Remember, in Washington, we see advertising that you don't see in the rest of the country. The constant barrage of right-wing advertising from that started back in February from organizations like Citizens for Patient Rights. Ooh, scary. Citizens for Patient Rights, run by Rick Scott, an indicted felon. Well, I better not call him indicted felon. He'll sue me. He wasn't, actually. But his organization was, in fact, heavily investigated for all kinds of improprieties in the healthcare field. This is the man who ran a massive first assault on the media, running ad after ad after ad, calling it a government takeover.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was very fuzzy for a number of months until Frank Luntz got involved during the summer and decided to issue a famous Luntz memo, which gave them 5 points to keep hammering. And you've heard those 5 points ever since. Government takeover of healthcare,
doctor
getting in the way of you and your doctor. But you have seen this assault. And knowing that that assault is happening, and knowing how little resources the progressives have to respond to that assault, you want to put all the blame. And when I say you, I mean the editorial you.
Right,
I think
right.
Many progressives do the same thing. You want to blame someone because we seem to be losing a battle we feel we should win. And who do we blame? The guy we elected.
Sure.
But there's so much more to the story than just him. We've sent him into battle with almost no weapons. We have very little.
And we didn't get his back.
Right. And Carolee is back with us. So what you're saying, Carolee, is we didn't have his back. We weren't there for Obama.
That's not in the days of the assault. Where were we when they were doing the town halls?
Oblivious.
And that kind of stuff. You're
right.
We
as a movement,
and we watched Fox and
the movement didn't exist during those town halls.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
but
right.
Also,
and it needed to. I mean,
I agree.
It needed to exist.
But the and maybe the problem is we don't have a Frank Lutz on the left. We don't have anybody, you know, coordinating things. And that I think is a problem also of the Democratic Party.
Let me give you a real example, Nicole. Okay. Around July, I was so frustrated that I decided to use a piece of my vacation with my brother. And we actually took a handheld video camera and we walked around Canada drumming up people to talk about health care.
Uh-huh,
you ever
good
see our
for
video?
You. I don't think so.
If you search Google for real Canadians on healthcare.
Okay.
Real Canadians talking healthcare. It will come right up.
Okay.
We made that with a handheld video camera. It got, I don't know, 60 or 70,000 hits in the space of a couple of weeks. Mostly by an awful lot of people who were trying to find a way to win the healthcare debate. Not just the general public, but the advocacy public. In all of the attention that video got, how many times can you think off the top of your head that one single media organization went to Canada, went to the UK, went to France, went to Cuba?
Mm-hmm.
Who besides Michael Moore's sicko, when did you see any of the media actually step outside the shell we call the United States of America and take a camera and go show Americans what happens in Canada?
Nobody, but I did a radio show one night, and I found two Canadians, went on Facebook, found two random Canadians, invited them on my show, and had them talk about their healthcare system. And before the show, I had no idea what they were going to say.
And
I got,
did they dislike it?
They loved it. And it was an amazing show. But
there is not one Canadian you will ever find that will have anything negative to say who isn't paid to say it.
Right. And we heard what Stu Tweedy, our caller from the UK, just said about their healthcare system.
That's right. But why? So you're turning around when you want to blame Obama for this state of affairs where a very conservative corporate media, okay, that is very tightly aligned. Remember, they all share similar boards. They all have similar stockholders, okay? The media and the healthcare industry are not that far apart. There aren't 6 degrees of separation between them by any means. It's more like one or two in many cases. Those people have no incentive to change this system. They will use the controversy of healthcare to sell more advertising. And let's remember that advertising, like the Supreme Court just agreed, is going to be a major way in which corporations speak. So it means more billions of dollars to the media to have corporate domination of our entire country.
But it is not only the media that those healthcare dollars are going to the media, yes, but they're also going to the politicians who need their money to get reelected. You know who was the biggest recipient of healthcare industry dollars during the 2008 campaign? Barack Obama.
Right.
Well, and therein lies the problem.
Did that surprise you?
No, not at all. But that's the problem right there.
Can I just jump in here?
Carolee, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just need to clarify what you said, okay? Because my contributions were classified as healthcare dollars.
Why?
He didn't take any PAC money, and he didn't take any lobbying money. He took from different industries, but when you rank the industries as to where the healthcare dollars came in, they were down about 20th. I mean, most of his money came from universities and places like that. Just so we're clear, I understand what you're saying, but you need to put it into the larger context. Okay, people gave money if they were healthcare workers, they were classified as being in the healthcare industry. There's nothing you can do about that.
Oh, because they ask who your employer is when you make a donation.
That's right.
I see.
And then those employers are classified. So
I gotcha.
He took no PAC money. He took no lobbyist money. That isn't the problem. The problem is more what Chuck is describing, which is that when you look out over the broader spectrum of the country, there's a lot of different points of view about healthcare, and there's, like, if you ask people who are on Medicare, they love Medicare. They don't want to let us have Medicare because they're afraid they won't get theirs if we get ours. And that's because Medicare has a problem. And that's part of what they were trying to resolve with this whole big omnibus package, was fixing Medicare so then we could actually maybe expand it. Because there are some serious problems with Medicare, mostly caused by the Republicans. You know, Medicare Advantage being one of the...
You're right.
Okay,
you're right.
I want to come... I think what she just said is really important, but I want to finish my point
about
bringing up the healthcare video, which is this.
Yes.
That video got a tremendous amount of traction on Twitter. It was retweeted by lots of people. Everybody said the same thing. Why isn't the mainstream media doing this video? Well, that is the question. Since so many of them saw it, why didn't one of them go do the same thing?
Because the mainstream media is owned by big corporate concerns who have a vested interest in, I guess, things staying the way they are.
And is that Barack Obama's fault?
No, it's the fault of our system.
So we have to start recognizing...
Oops, I got dropped again.
No, Carolee, you're still there. We're still here. But she's not hearing us. I think there's a problem in my settings. See, it says no microphone signal. Carolee, you're still there, so hold on, because you'll be back in a second.
Okay.
You still there? You hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay. All right, you're still there. Don't worry. You're not being dropped. For some reason, you're not hearing us for a few minutes, but we're still here.
Okay. Well, I'll let you bring me back then.
Okay. All right. So, Shock, I'm sorry. Continue.
So... If we recognize that with all of the months and months and months of onslaught, we all nod our head and go, oh, yeah, well, that conservative media, it's pretty powerful, or, oh, yeah, the pharma industry is powerful, and yet we just roll over and take it. Do we have to? Look at what Angelo, who just called from Stop Beck, who's a great guy. He's the one that's been taking what Color of Change has been doing with the Stop Beck movement and bringing it to Twitter. And he works really hard, and they've gotten that the organizations together have gotten over 102 sponsors to drop Glenn Beck.
That's right.
Now, that's phenomenal. That's almost the only activism you can see these days on Twitter. But it proves that it can work when people really get involved. I feel that we are never going to really take this country back from conservatives that now own it until we really recognize that every single person has to make an effort all the time using whatever tools the progressive community can muster. But people have to recognize that we are in a war for our very survival. And we better accept the our little gains, maybe Barack Obama. Simple question. Would you feel better right now with Barack Obama, as broken as you think he is, or would you rather have Sarah Palin?
That's not even the question. I had a caller ask me that the other day, and that's not even the debate. But
why isn't it?
Because I would rather have Barack Obama on his worst day than Sarah Palin or John McCain or pretty much any other Republican out there on their best day.
And do you think that he's going to remain for a second term if he doesn't have the progressive community really step up?
But we need to see him step up too. Look, you know, I'm upset about what he's doing in Afghanistan. I know he campaigned on it. This is what he said he was going to do. But I would have thought after this first year in office, he would have reassessed the information and realized that sending more troops in there is not going to help matters. It's just going to make it worse. Plus, we can't afford $1 million a soldier over there every year. We need the money here desperately, and we are throwing it away in Afghanistan. We need to get the hell out of there, quit meddling with the rest of the world, and take care of our own country here.
Well, I agree with you. Carolee will disagree with you. She happens to think she has very good arguments for why she thinks that Obama's doing the right thing. I'm a bit on the fence on that whole issue because, again, it's really a complicated problem. Part of me knows full well that a big part of me believes that all nations have to deserve the right to self-determination, that no matter how painful it is, that to some extent you have to let people – let water seek its own level and let these countries find themselves.
Okay.
On the other hand, I know how horrendous that can be to do that.
Yes. Now, the other thing – let me tell you this. The other thing is that The progressives feel like we did come out in great numbers to work for Barack Obama to get him elected. Yet it seems like once he got in office, he's listening to everybody but us. It seems like he cares more about the Republicans and what they're concerned about than what the progressive community is concerned about. When I heard him the other day talk about more nuclear power plants, more a clean coal, which doesn't exist, and offshore drilling, I wanted to puke.
I love
But you knew he was never a leftist.
I knew that, but I'm
liberal. But he's a centrist.
Yeah, I get that, but that's not what he ran on. I'm sorry, Carolee, you said something there?
Oh, I just lost you again.
Oh,
it's
you're back.
It cuts you off in the mid-sentence. I don't know what's doing that, but as long as I have a chance to jump in here, Afghanistan's complicated, and I really like to address what you were saying about him ignoring or feeling it, the progressive community at least feeling like he's ignoring their concerns. And I guess my response to that would be to say, I think you have to move things forward more gradually than the progressive community wants him to. And the fact of the matter is, a failure right now would be devastating to all of us, including progressives. So, for example, if he had pushed single payer out there, okay, it would have happened. And it would have been a failure, and it would have been as deep and devastating as Bill Clinton's failure was.
Well, but Carolee, if he hadn't let single payer or Medicare for All be taken off the table before discussions even started, if they had started with that as a bargaining point, maybe we could have gotten a public option. But because he started from a point of weakness, he just easily gave the public option away.
My microphone's kicking out again.
I'm sorry. But he gave the public option away without a fight, because that was his bargaining chip. He, instead of starting from a position of strength and saying, all right, single payer, all right, we'll give that up so we can get a public option included.
That's Apple. I mean, single payer would be such a massive change from what we have today. I don't see how you can say that. Single payer would be virtually throwing away 1/6 of our economy and starting over again.
Fine.
That's what even I favor that.
I do too.
But you're still talking about something that is almost political, probably about as close to political suicide as you could muster, because we don't have the mandate for that. Who would vote for single payer? Look at what they did when they weren't facing single payer. Look at how vicious they were. What do you think single payer would have been like?
I guess that's my point, is that you saw only a tiny taste of what you would see if he had started with single payer. The socialization of healthcare, all that, was only a teeny little tiny taste of what you would have seen if he'd started with single payer.
Fine, but instead, if he had started with single payer, we could have bargained down to the public option. But instead, what you get is Joe Lieberman, who thinks he was elected president, hijacking the entire Senate and the entire healthcare debate, and getting his way so that what he wanted is what we got.
But again, that's not Obama's fault. That problem with Lieberman exists anyway. This is, again, the problem. It's not like Obama can walk in and have a Democratic House and Senate. He doesn't. He has a huge number of conservatives who are as corrupt as any corrupt political entity can be in any culture. We're just as bad as most other cultures. As a good friend of mine says, you know, the only difference between us and Mexico is in Mexico you pay off the cab drivers, and here we pay off the judges or the politicians. You know, we have a very corrupt system. It has huge conservative influences that represent, let's not kid ourselves, there's a good reason why the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is an extremely conservative body. Okay, they represent the interests of most of the billionaires and most of the corporations that run this country. And those people have been running the ads relentlessly since last April. Okay, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, one way or another, is underneath, down at the bottom of the crawl on your TV screen, on countless ads that you see. Even if they're not written down at the bottom of your TV screen, they're subsidizing some of the other organizations. Or as Larissa will tell you, they're paying through various black bag operations to ensure that other organizations can achieve a kind of control over the process. They are relentless. You're not going to solve that with simple parliamentary parlor tricks. You're not going to come in and suddenly say, oh, well, if we could just solve the Lieberman problem. We have a massive conservative country that rules the entire process from the media all the way down to Congress, all the way down to the local level. Most of our school boards, they were taken over by conservatives and religious fundamentalists in the 90s. They used the Reagan's victory to propel a conservative message at local levels that still carries most of the legislatures today. We live in a very conservative country, and these people are very ruthless. They're not going to let you suddenly just decide, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a single-payer health care system? Okay? They don't even want the system that's being proposed now, which is why, as Carolee will point out, they fight it so strenuously. If this was such a gift or a handoff to the pharma, to the healthcare industry, why would they be so tenacious in fighting it? It's because it's an incremental step that puts us, that puts the people a little bit in control of the process where right now we have none.
But,
the public
option
that you were so fond of would have only been 10 or 12% of the population.
That's, I wasn't fond of it. It wasn't enough because the public option got so watered down. It would have been a real public option if anybody who wanted to buy into it could. So, and that's what it should have been. Anybody who wants to buy into it can. And then, you know, and then it, the way they had the public option set up, it was bound to fail because it would have only allowed the sickest, the most infirmed among us. So it would, the risk pool in there would have been the people who need it the most, and it would have been prohibitively expensive, and it would have gone down to failure. The whole thing is set up to, was set up to fail. And that's why I did not like this health care bill. And I'm sort of glad that it's not going through because it wasn't what we were told we were going to get. We were told we were going to get real health care reform.
Who told you? Wait a minute, who told you?
Well,
who laid out this comprehensive health care plan?
Well, Obama, the way he campaigned was on real health care reform. Now, again, everything was in generalities. Everything was in generalities.
As all campaigns are.
That's right. In fact, hold on one second, because we got another caller here that I want to take because, Shock, this is somebody who wants to disagree with you, and I think this is David calling. David, is that you? Let's see if I can get this working.
Yes.
There you are. Okay, David, you're on the air. Go ahead. Shock, David wants to talk to you.
Shock, buddy, you need to go into rehab for opium addiction, bro. You need to open your eyes. You said that we gave Obama the keys to a defective bus. You are wrong, 100% wrong. This guy's not only the president of the United States. Don't interrupt me, please. This guy's not only the president of the United States, he's the head of the Democratic Party, and he needs to grow a fucking pair, okay? He has bent over for every corporatist out there and totally sold out the people that are responsible for him being in the White House to begin with. He has lied. He has told lie after lie after lie. You remember how he went on national media and said that the photographs from Abu Ghraib that just came out after he got inaugurated showed nothing new, and less than a week later, it showed that they were totally different than anything that had ever been out there. That was one of his biggest lies, and that was when he lost me. Now he campaigned as a candidate saying that he was going to bring meaningful health care reform, and now we as progressives are being asked to accept the scrapings from the bottom of a shithouse barrel? No, sir. I put too much of myself into this to accept this kind of crap from him. And for you to blame this on the media is total bullshit. Pull your head out of your ass and get objective about this. The media is not to blame for this. This guy was given a mandate beyond any mandate in the last 40 goddamn years. And
what has he done with it? He spent half
of what will probably be his only term in office trying to cuddle up to the goddamn Republicans and get them to sing Kumbaya. It ain't going to fucking happen. Ram the goddamn agenda down their stinking, miserable throats.
Shock?
Your turn.
there's nothing to say to that. there's nothing
You're
to say
right,
to that.
Because I'm
every
right.
Every left right now that really does believe that in the so-called Green Lantern decoder ring theory, that Obama has the power to make all this happen by himself. I simply don't agree.
But he does. You know what? But
I predicted that he would fail at this level. Okay, that's one
quote,
reason I wasn't particularly enthused about Obama to begin
you
with.
You have
however,
the right to your opinion,
the point is, once
but you don't have the right to your own.
Wait, hold on. You're talking over each other.
Shock.
Excuse me?
You're talking over each other. David, say that again.
Hello?
I thought it was my turn to talk. That's all.
Right. Okay. All right. David, hold on. Shock. Well. David, say what you just said. I'm having that weird phone.
Go ahead. To quote Mr. Obama, quoting Daniel Patrick Moynihan, you do have the right to your own opinion, but you don't have the right to your own facts. And the facts refute your position. This guy has done nothing but go around in circles trying to exercise his crush on Olympia Snow. Olympia Snow isn't responsible for
That's
him being
awesome.
In the White House. It's people like me and Nicole that put his ass in the goddamn White House, and he needs to start respecting that instead of bending over for assholes like Rahm Emanuel.
I think I worked just as hard to get Obama elected.
He needs to start respecting you too.
I could potentially be just as disappointed as you are. The question is, why am I not?
Oh,
I'm probably more idealistic than you are, but I'm not as angry as you are. Okay, and I see that anger.
I'm angry because he's betrayed me, Shock.
David.
All right, David, it's Shock's turn. Go ahead.
If you continue to deconstruct the process that you have and that you elected, you're going to end up with Sarah Palin, and then you're going to sit there and say, well, it was that asshole Obama that got us into this fix. If that makes you feel good,
you know what, Shock? I would rather have a true Republican in there, because then I would know to protect myself, that you have elected a Democrat that I think is on my side, only to have him turn around and stab me in the back.
Well, excuse me, but I looked at a list of 88 items that have been achieved under this administration in a year yesterday, and a lot of it was pretty impressive. I look at the Open Government Directive. Are you familiar with what that is?
I'm not, but I'm familiar with the fact that 30,000 more of our troops are going to Afghanistan than were before, despite the fact that we can't afford it. I am familiar with the fact
that
we don't have health care after almost 2 years of this administration. I'm familiar with the fact that we don't have an energy policy in this country. I'm familiar with the fact that there's more people out of work than in the last 40 years.
What would you like to see happen in November?
What would I like to see happen in November? Yeah. Before November, I'd like to see the people in the Democratic Party wake the fuck up.
Okay, suppose they don't. Then what? You want to see all those corrupt people that you know are mostly conservative?
Then we're in a situation where we've got a weak president who will lose the unprecedented majority that he had, and he will be able to do absolutely nothing for the rest of his one term in office.
And
then
we
will be faced with the situation of having a worse administration than we do now. And the reason that we will have that worse administration is because this guy sat there with his thumb up his ass for the first 2 years of his term.
Yeah, and every time he turns around and tries to find some direction that can move the country and the agenda forward, he's battling the left. He's battling you. He's battling the firebaggers. He's battling the angry, disaffected left. And the right knows it.
Because
right
he's betrayed
you
us.
As if you were
he ran on one agenda, and
right
now he's serving a completely different agenda.
Whining.
Okay, I'm going to step in because you guys are talking over each other again. And David, I love you dearly, but watch the language because, you know, you don't need to go there. All right, David, I'm going to put you back on hold for a second. That guy hung up. All right. So, you know what? I need to call, Jack Rice so we can get a news update. So, what should we do? All right. David, you want to have a last word here?
No, that's cool. I pretty much said almost everything I would have liked to have said.
Okay. Well, thanks for chiming in.
And to quote the Beatles, I'd like to say thank you for myself and the group, and we hope we pass the audition.
Very good. Thank you very much. All right. Let's do this. I'm going to try to shock. If you can hold on a moment, see if I can. I don't know if I can even do this. We're going to figure this out. I'm going to try to call Jack Rice back. You know what, Shock, just stay on the phone.
I'm here.
Let me call Jack. Oh, my current call will be put on hold. Perfect. Okay, call. So, Shock, you hold on. I'm going to call Jack and try to get a news update. And but I do want to talk to Jack because I know he's going to Haiti.
This is Jack.
Hey, Jack Rice. It's Nicole Sandler calling from RadioOrNot.com.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Actually, when I just called the cell number, it still says Air America on it.
I know. I need to change that message, don't I?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you just keep it there as an inside / outside joke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. Let's do this. Because you're here in the official capacity from the Talk Radio News Service, so I got to do the official sounder.
I read the news today.
All right, so now joining us from the Talk Radio News Service at TalkRadioNews.com is my former Air America colleague, Jack Rice. And did I read you are going to Haiti?
That's correct. I leave this weekend, so it's going to be interesting. I think it's a good time to be there because it seems to me that the entire world was there for a little while, and then they moved on. And I think now's the time to really focus in on what's really going on.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And actually, yesterday I had Stan Brock on the show. I've been filling in for Randy Rhodes all week because Washington, D.C. has been socked in, and she hasn't been able to get into her studio. So,
so you're the one who's happy that snow has been,
yes,
been pummeling us.
I'm the one. But, so I had Stan Brock on, and Stan Brock is the guy. He's the founder of RAM, Remote Area Medical, who does these medical expeditions here in the U.S., the free clinics all over the country, which is how Wendell Potter came over to the good side, because he happened upon one of them, and it turned him around. So Stan Brock is an amazing man, and they have started they're on the ground in Haiti, and they've got medical personnel over there in 2 week shifts. They're going to be there for the long haul. So before you go, you should check out ramusa.org, and maybe you can, do something with them while you're over there.
That's a great idea. It seems to me that, you know, the amazing work that we have seen from a lot of these humanitarian groups that get ignored regularly while everybody else gets sort of all the glory is absolutely something that I think should be done. There are some amazing organizations that are doing some truly great work. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yes, I can't wait. Well, I'd love to get some reports from you while you're there, if you can do it.
Of course. I'm going to have sat phones strapped to me, so it's going to be you and me. Come on, we get to do some real talking, because I think that what typically happens is people give you sort of the quick down and dirty, and I'm not going to give you big picture stories. I'm not. I'm going to try to come back when I'm there and introduce you to people. You know, let's talk about this young woman, what she's dealing with her family, or this little boy, or this family, or this father who's trying to take care of his kids, or whatever. Because it seems to me that the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to drop in for 5 seconds and say, let me tell you exactly what's going on and what the people of Haiti really need. Nah,
well,
I'm not going to do that.
And unfortunately, that's what you get these days from TV news. They do these quick, 30-second to 2-minute hits. And in and out, and that's it. But, so I love that you're going to be on the ground. Now here's the sticking point. Who are you doing this for? Are you doing it for Talk Radio News?
Well, I'm going to be doing a little of it for them, but I'll be doing it for multiple organizations. And so I will be there for them for a period of time. And what's really interesting is I haven't even determined exactly how long I'm going to be there.
Wow.
It just depends. I don't have a flight out. I have a flight in. And I can get out when I get out, or choose to get out, maybe, or when I happen to get out, maybe. And because of our former employers, yours and mine, I find that I have, flexibility.
Yeah, thanks. A little bit of time on your hands.
What it is that I can do.
Uh-huh.
I feel so flexible, strangely enough.
Yes.
Liberated might be a good word, although that's probably not the word I would probably use.
No.
Because I don't feel so liberated, strangely.
Unintentionally liberated, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. All right, so, well, that's cool. So you're leaving this weekend.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's coming up very, very quickly. In fact, I'm just sort of, just now, sort of in my head, you know, pulling out equipment and starting to realize, okay, I need to make sure I charge up these batteries, got to make sure I have the SLR camera, got to make sure I get the shotgun mic out for the video camera, you know, this, that, and the other. And, you know, that's going to keep me busy sort of dealing with that. So, you know, that's just part of the logistics of getting it all taken care of.
Great. And Jack's website is jackrice.org. So I would guess you're going to be uploading videos there all the time and putting a lot of stuff on there. So
oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a big part of it. It really is the multimedia side of this in terms of getting that done. But I'm with you, you know. I mean, it's so weird just trying to get all this stuff taken care of. I know, you know, you've been filling in for Randy, so that's been probably keeping you kind of busy because you got to sort of rev up for that show, you know, plus then what you're doing afterward, too. So I think I'm filling in for Ed Schultz tomorrow.
Are you? So, very cool.
Yeah, so.
Good, yeah.
So no, there you go.
Right, good. You know, I've been all week long. Today's the fourth day in a row. I've done these five-hour-long marathons. I do Randy's show for 3 hours and then immediately turn around, flip on the stream, and go live here. So
Are you out of your mind? What's going on with you?
You know.
That's insane.
I know it is.
No, I'm because last, was it Wednesday? I don't know, I filled in for Ed Schultz, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did 3 hours. Then I literally flipped over and did WRL for 3 hours after that. And then I did like Oberman or something that night. And I could barely talk. And I thought, this is just friggin' stupid. I mean, what the hell am I thinking? I don't even understand the logic of what I'm doing. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind? What are you doing?
This is what we do. what we do.
I know, and I'm still trying to figure out why at this point. Sometimes, well, like, what's going on?
But here's the question, Jack Rice. This is what I ask. I mean, I've been in radio since college. This is what I know. This is what I do. You were a CIA agent. You're a lawyer. You're a prosecutor. You've done all these things, and you're doing this?
Yeah, well, that's a damn good point. Thanks for bringing that up.
you can do other things. I don't know how to do anything else.
No, I'll be honest. I mean, a lot of what I bring to the table is quite a bit different than most simply because my experience comes from different places.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when I look at what's going on with this. I just had a conversation with somebody who has a lot of experience in this industry, too, and we were sort of talking about the nature of how it's changing and what it's doing, and whether or not it actually makes any sense to sort of continue on based upon those changes. And I think there's going to be some real soul searching on my part about what's going to happen in the future. To tell you the truth, in many ways, one of the reasons I like doing radio, the reason I like doing TV, is that it gives me the... Not the juice, but frankly, it maybe gives me the excuse to really do the things that I really like, which is go to Afghanistan, go to Guantanamo, go to Africa, go to Haiti, go to Kosovo, go to Darfur. Go to all of these places, go to Mexico, covering the drug wars. I mean, these are all things that I've done, and I get the sort of ability to do that, and I'm actually far more interested in that and the ability to tell a long-form story about what's really going on in a very complex issue more than I am about sitting in a studio day after day after day talking about how smart I am.
Right.
I find that to be shockingly boring, and there are times when you want to put a gun to your head. Not really, but I mean figuratively.
No, exactly. Because, I know exactly what you're saying. But the thing is, and this is also sort of the direction I'm going in that not going out and doing those kind of stories, but, you know, the Internet affords us the freedom to do things like that and for you to do things like that. And look, I am on Ustream now, all right? I'm streaming audio, so there are people listening via the audio stream, and then there are also people watching on the Ustream. Right now, at this very moment, there are 160 people watching on the Ustream. Throughout, since I started at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock this afternoon doing Randy's show, I've had 977 people on this stream, just on the Ustream part. So, you know, this is, it's a, and this is just my little feed here. There are so many, you know, ways that the internet allows you to get out there. You can create your own show, you know, and with the advent of Wi-Fi everywhere, it's all going to be portable. I mean, jackrice.org can become your huge, you know, your platform, and you can travel the world and do these shows. I just got a call a few minutes ago from Stu Tweedy, who's in the in the chat room now. He says hello, who just called in from England. You know, so I mean, the possibilities are exist where they didn't a few years ago.
I'm amazed by sort of how technology changes. Again, one of the ones for me that I still find kind of amazing is I'll never forget, this wasn't long ago when I was in Afghanistan, where I was able to get to a hot site, meaning access to the internet, and I brought my laptop because I bring my laptop with me everywhere, and I started Skyping with my wife. It's in the middle of the night, I'm in Kandahar. It's stupid dangerous, and I'm actually doing a video conversation with my wife and my children, and it's the middle of the night for me, and it's freezing my ass off, and yet capability to do that is an extraordinary thing. Now, what I think is also interesting is that based upon sort of what I do and what I know how to do, I think that the quality of what I produce is as good or better than anything that comes out of the major networks, because
yep.
I actually understand the topics, and I have the ability to do it. So the real question now is, you know, what is it that I'm going to do? I haven't quite hammered that out, but I am really having this very serious sort of approach to what comes next based upon what radio has done, what media has done, and simply what I choose not to do anymore. The only question, of course, is sadly, I don't have the ability to dip into a trust fund and just call my lawyer and say, I'm sorry, you're going to have to crack open an additional million because I need it desperately.
Right, and therein lies the problem.
Yeah, therein lies the problem. So I haven't quite reconciled that yet. I'm really hoping that my wife has actually been hiding the fact that she has a trust fund. She's been, just been waiting for 15 years for me to prove that I love her. So I'm really hoping down deep that somewhere she's just holding back and that now she's going to come up and say, okay, now that you have proven worthy, I have to tell you something. So I'm hopeful. I'm not optimistic, but I am hopeful.
Yeah, you and me both. Look, you know, times are tough, and that's why, you know, as I said at the top of the show, Randy Rhodes people calling on Monday was a godsend in more ways than one, because financially it certainly helped me out to get a paycheck this week. And, you know, spirit-wise, too, I was starting to get, you know the feeling when we lose a job and, you know, you feel like you're spinning your wheels sometimes. And so it created a spirit boost also. You know, I got that written on my hand, lift American spirits. And it happened, you know, it was that easy. So, but we need that.
Oh, you're such you're such a partisan hack. Check you out. God, I love that.
So Jack Rice, any business happen in D.C. today? We heard that there was, because you are calling in for the Talk Radio News Service, that Harry Reid said he was going to have a debate on the jobs bill.
Well, essentially what's really out there and what we're getting in terms of numbers now is it's an estimate that it appears we're going to probably move to creating about 95,000 jobs a month, which is actually in itself extraordinary when you consider over the last 2 or 3 years, we were losing at a number at some point of in excess of 700,000 jobs a month. The fact that we're creating 95,000 a month is pretty amazing. On the other hand, and this is the downside, is that it's estimated that of the jobs that have been lost just in January, some of those were yours and mine. Oh, wait, no, to be honest.
That too.
But part of the problem is that in order just to stay even, it's estimated that we need to create about 130,000 jobs a month just to stay even. So we're really standing somewhat still right now, but that in itself is so much better than where we were. So that's one thing. Of course, the other thing that I think is dominating the media as of right now is that President Bill Clinton has had two stents put in his heart in the last several hours and apparently is resting comfortably, as they say. And so other than that, not a lot is going on. Well, that's not necessarily true. One last story that is out there internationally is today is the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. The Iranian government rolled several hundred thousand supporters into the streets to ensure that everybody realized just how much the Iranian people loved them. Yeah. And in addition to that, apparently it's continuing to crack down on all the people who don't and killing several of them just to make sure that everybody realizes that the others better love them appropriately.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I talked about this on Randy's show today. I had Trita Parsi on with me. And, you know, his thing, he has a piece today on the Financial Times talking about how we need to address the human rights issues in Iran, more so than the nuclear issue, though we need to deal with the nuclear issue. But, you know, when I did mention that the fact that they're enriching uranium now up to 20%, and Ahmadinejad is out there claiming we are now a nuclear country and all that, I was accused of you know, warmongering by a couple of callers. I don't know if I ever got them on the air or not, but I saw them on the call screen. It's almost like there's no winning on this issue. You know, Iran is a threat in the Middle East. It is a dangerous nation with the government it has, yet the people would love nothing more than to be liberated from this government. It's a really, really sad situation over there more than anything else.
Yeah, the problem is it's incredibly complicated for a lot of different reasons. One of the problems that we have with Iran, in my mind, and this is based upon a lot of years of working throughout the Middle East, and then as a former CIA officer, too, and this is one of the areas that I actually had my fingers on a little bit, and it's this, is that Iran is an incredibly sophisticated country. It's an incredibly educated country, and it's an incredibly influential country in the Middle East. 75 million people, three times the size of Iraq. In addition, they have the ability to pull triggers, not just from their own country, but also with Hezbollah and places like Lebanon, with Hamas and places like Gaza and the West Bank. So that's part of this. But there's another issue that I think is out there that I think we're still struggling with, and that's this. President Ahmadinejad has decided to use this sort of craziness that he uses regularly as a tool, and I believe this. One of the things that he's doing is when he sees instability in his own country, the best thing that could happen from his perspective in terms of dealing with the green revolution on the inside is to be attacked by the Israelis or the Americans. I mean this, by the way,
yeah.
Because if that were to happen, what you're going to see, and this is natural, is that the revolution would vanish overnight because all of a sudden it would become –
they would all come together.
Or you're
right.
Against them.
Exactly. Well, it was – and I hate to say this – excuse me, but it was almost like the, you know, this country after 9/11, we were unified, and we were unified behind George W. Bush. We, you know, we supported our president, even though I couldn't stand the man. I was there with him in those days following 9/11. And you're absolutely right. If Iran was attacked today, that country would come together in a way that they haven't been for many years. But the fact of the matter is now that most of the people, the Green Revolution, the people taking to the streets now in Iran, do not want to be ruled by the supreme leader, who is the Ayatollah or Ahmadinejad. I mean, I think they want out from that regime. But it's not our place to get them out from that regime. That's something they have to do.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I've had conversations with quite a few conservatives today talking about how weak Obama is and how weak he is on terrorism and weak he is on everything and how we really need to go in and support these various groups. And my attitude for most of them is, you know what, come back and talk to me when you actually have a valid passport. But beyond that, what I really think is one of the problems that we face is if we go in and to blatantly support these very organizations, what you're then doing is you're giving Ahmadinejad and the Supreme Leader an excuse to call them puppets of the Americans.
Yeah.
And so you have to find a way to be able to support them in such a way that allows them to truly be independent and at the same time somehow survive, because this is a disaster, while at the same time not being seen inside of Iran, and I don't think they are, as puppets. So if you can find a way to do those two things, I think that is critical. I do believe, by the way, that this is the kind of support that will grow from the inside out. It's only recently that one of the senior clerics actually died inside of Iran, and this was in the last several weeks, who was at one point thought to be the person who was going to follow after Khomeini. He did not, but he actually supported the revolution, and he's actually been in support of the protesters themselves. I think what you're going to find is there will be more and more of them over time who will come to support them and realize that, just like in this country, what you're finding from Ahmadinejad and others is they're basically saying that Allah, God, is on our side. And slowly but surely, the people of Iran will come to realize that Allah is really not on the side of Ahmadinejad. It's just simply going to take time to do that. I don't know how much patience we have, though, to wait for that, or the people of Iran have that much patience either, because I can't imagine having to deal with that myself.
No, nor can I. And you watch the people on the streets, and you know that there are many of them who are very, you know, not thrilled with their leadership there. We also know that it's a young, thriving, very Western population who, you know, like America. So, you know, this the thing the other night with Sarah Palin, when she said that, oh, I know how, you know, Obama can assure himself of a second term. He should wage war on Iran. That should scare the hell out of everybody out there. Because that just shows the thinking of, well, she doesn't think, but obviously she's fed her information from somebody. But the fact that they're thinking of even, you know, attacking yet another country and using it as a political tool, well, that's what George Bush did. He wanted to be a war president, and he certainly became one.
Well, I still remember being at the RNC, having a long conversation with Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and he sort of looks like Wilford Brimley. That helps. You remember the big mustache?
Yes.
And I still remember sitting with Wilford, you know, Ambassador Wilford, and him telling me, and I have this on video, by the way, go to YouTube and just type in John Bolton and type in Jack Rice or something. And what you'll probably pull up is this video of my interview with him at the RNC, where this guy tells me, we only have two options with it, and only two options. These are his quotes, not mine, where he says either strategically strike them or we have regime change. That's it. No other alternative. That's it.
Wow.
That's what we do. We either remove them or we bomb them. And I thought, oh, I bet you don't have any kids in the military or any kids who could go and fight, because you make a psychotic move like this. This guy was a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. I mean, contemplate that. And contemplate the number of people who support the likes of Sarah Palin right now. And you can't help but be petrified and try to contemplate the possibility of moving to Sweden or Denmark. I mean, all I know is sometimes I really question whether or not the people in this country are even paying attention.
Yeah, no. and therein lies the other problem. You know, most don't. And unfortunately, so many who do are paying attention to you know, faux news, and that's where they get their information from, and they think that what Glenn Beck or Bill O'Reilly tells them is true, and that's
Wait a
scary.
Second. I'll have you know that I've appeared on faux news many times.
Have
Did you?
You
know that?
No.
I appeared on faux news once, and one of the last times I appeared, I was at the RNC, and they asked me, they said, so what do you think? Because Sarah Palin had just been announced as the vice presidential running mate of John McCain. And I said, I can't believe this. This is just insane. So I'm on phone news. And they said, so, Jack, what do you think about this? You know, everybody's very excited. And I said, this is political suicide. And this is insanity. They've already got the crazy right. These people will vote for a Republican who's had sex with a goat on camera. They will, because they're voting for Republican.
That's right.
But you know what? But trust me, there's enough Democrats who will do the same thing. You know that's true, right?
I do.
They'll vote Democrat regardless.
I know.
The problem is, The problem is you bring in a crazy like Sarah Palin, you've already got the crazy people who are going to have, who are going to vote for the person having sex with a pill. You already got that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you're going to get everybody else in the middle. Those polls will hold up. She knows how to pander, and she does very well in terms of sound bites. The bottom line is that when people actually see that the only way she actually could conduct foreign policy is with notes written on her hand,
yep,
you've got to believe that this is not the person that you want actually carrying the football and having your finger on the button.
Can you imagine? Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, it is inconceivable. Inconceivable. All right.
By the way, I just saw that movie the other night. It's one of my absolute favorite movies.
Princess Bride is wonderful.
Geez, are you kidding?
Inconceivable. All right. Well, Jack Rice, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for checking in tonight. Travel safely to Haiti. I'm actually going to be out in L.A. next week. And so my schedule is going to be sort of sporadic. But I definitely want to have you on. So we'll email each other and figure it out, okay?
We'll figure it out.
Yep. And we will keep watching you at jackrice.org. Everybody in the chat says they love you. And they're thrilled that you called in and travel safe. And
don't tell anybody. It's a closely held secret. Just you and me.
Okay. All right. No problem. All right. The one and only wonderful Jack Rice calling in for the Talk Radio News Service at talkradionews.com. And find him at jackrice.org and on Twitter, too. All right. Thanks, Jack.
See you. Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye. All right. I think I've left Shock. Shock, you still there? All right. I think he's gone, too. And we are done for the night. Thank you to Shock. Thank you to Carolee. Thank you to David and to Stu, who called in from England, and Angelo, and everybody. I'll get the phone thing figured out. I will. But now here's the thing. Next week, I'm going to be out in California. Monday night, I will be doing the show from LA. I am not on tomorrow night. I don't do Friday nights right now, and especially after this week, I need to rest and I need to prepare for my trip, because my I have neglected my life this week, but it's good. You know, I got to do laundry, I got to clean, I got to do grocery shopping and all, and get ready to leave, because I leave at the crack of dawn Monday morning and fly out to LA. We will do the show Monday night from Los Angeles. Again, it will likely only be on the Ustream. I will put all the details up on my blog at radioornot.com. Allison is not going with me. She will be home with the babysitter. Still not sure whether or not the thing is happening with Jackson Brown live on Tuesday or not, but we'll see. Beginning Thursday night, I will be in San Diego for a wonderful music conference. So we will be pretty music centrist next week. You know, we'll talk about things that matter too. So that's about it. What time is it? I'm just gonna, rather than play a song to go out, because we'll have a lot of music next week. This was a busy night. So. Thank you so much for sticking with me. Thank you again to all the Randy Rhodes listeners who came over. And I hope you'll stick around and visit back to, Mr. Evans just wants to hear the Beatles. I'll tell you what, we will go out with a song tonight. How about that? We will. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. No, Randy will be in tomorrow. If anything, she will be in tomorrow. You know, if by some chance I get a call from them in the morning, I'll do her show. I'm not going to turn it down, but she'll be in tomorrow. All right. We'll get you Pete Seeger one night, Joy. I promise you. All right. Back to this. So no show tomorrow night. Back Monday night from Los Angeles. But please check in at radioornot.com. Check the blog, and I will update you on all the activities there. Okay? All right. And you know what? I'm not going to play a song. I'm just going to say good night. And thank you, thank you, thank you. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you Monday, radio or not. Good night.